Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hurricane Sandy gets called an act of God by insurance companies, an act of global warming, according to the cover of Business Week, an act of foolhardiness committed by a lot of people who now regret not fleeing flood zones. But what about the prior acts? What about acts of urban planning, acts of building policy? A team of writers have published an article in the Huffington Post, goes by the title Hurricane Sandy Damage Amplified by Breakneck Development of Coast. Says it right there. And here to say it on this show is John Rudolph, the lead author of that article. Thanks for coming on, John.
Thanks for having me.
The article, as I read it, two main components. One was about the evacuation procedures, and one was about the planning procedures allowing the buildings to go up in the first place. So, you know, let's take that part first. What did you find in terms of development in these places where there was flooding and loss of life?
We found very rapid development sort of across the region. No doubt the fastest growth was on the Jersey Shore. I mean, you look at Ocean County, which is their the county that got hammered the worst, and it's the fastest growing county in New Jersey. They added close to 200,000 people since the 1980s. But also, if you look at Staten Island, grew very fast. We actually found a study by a College of Staten Island professor. He found 2,700 new structures went up on Staten Island in what's essentially an extreme flood zone.
Right. It's not just that buildings we know, a lot of apartment complex went on in the middle of Staten Island, but we're talking about places on the south shore of Staten Island, really vulnerable places.
They sent us an incredible graphic, and I'd love if people could check it out. We're gonna put it up on our website at some point. But at this south shore, we're talking places like Midland Beach that really got hammered. They created a graphic that showed how homes, you know, apartment buildings were filling in over time. And, you know, it starts out, there's nothing there. It's actually marshes. A lot of that land is below sea level. So what happened during the Robert Moses era, they filled in those marshes. They, you know, put bungalows on there. But, you know, if you look at that area now, it's densely developed. I spent a lot of time walking around there before the last hurricane. And, you know, it's just a regular suburban community. But it was a marsh not that long ago.
Yeah, and when we talk about Ocean County, as the name implies, you know, places, much of the development of that county takes place either on the ocean or in inlets that are susceptible to flooding, like Toms River. Lakeview, in the last 10 years, had an explosion in population. Brick Township, I know, since, you know, 1990, or I think since 1980, it's doubled. But there hasn't been, as you document in the Huffington Post, this weighing of development with flood zones. Now, I know we often hear environmentalists object to development. That plays out. That's a usual thing we're used to. But is this happening more and more that people are putting up red flags saying, let's not develop here, not just to save or preserve a wetland, but because the people could be in incredible danger?
Yeah, no. And actually, one of the most interesting examples we found was in Queens. There's a neighborhood called Arverne by the Sea. And that was something that got a green light in about 2006. And they've been building it up, and they have plans to sort of build it even further. And, you know, we talked to some people who were, you know, opposed it at the time. They didn't oppose it on environmental grounds. They opposed it on grounds that this was not a particularly safe place to build. This is an area that had been hit by hurricanes 1938, 1893, devastating storms. Actually, there had been a Arverne by the Sea, you know, way, 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 way back. Destroyed, completely yeah. Destroyed by a hurricane. And so we talked to a Queens College professor. This is not a, you know, radical environmentalist. And he's saying, look, you know, if you look at the flood protections, they're almost non-existent out in that area. You know, you have streets that are open to the beach, just create a channel for the floodwaters to come in. The seawalls are cracked. And so you know, there was some criticism that was going on that was not just sort of your typical environmental, let's protect the coast. It was stuff like, this is not particularly safe to do.
You quote professors. It seems like some of the leading lights of in Staten Island academia are saying this is insane to build there. You quote people who, you know, the former chief of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation's New York City office, Suzanne Matei. She's saying things like, it's horrendous. There's been all this research and analysis and so little action. But what about the politicians? You know, there are a lot of local politicians who are not adverse to talking about global warming and saying we have to change things. But what politicians are saying, let's not build here. Let's deny developers permits to build here.
I mean, that's where the rubber hits the road. And a lot of these politicians, particularly in New York, Cuomo, Bloomberg, they've been pretty good on climate change. They're recognizing the risk. You have Bloomberg with his Plan NYC. But when it comes to actually denying developers the right to build where they want to build, it's tough. It's real tough for them to do that. And particularly in New Jersey, we found that there was just very little interest in you know, doing sort of a top-down, you know, heavy hand of government saying, you know, don't build here. It was basically sort of a laissez-faire, do what you will. And I think, you know, sort of we're seeing some of the consequences right now are pretty apparent.
Mike Paskin for Brian Lehr on WNYC, speaking with John Rudolph, author of Hurricane Sandy Damage, Amplified by Breakneck Development of Coasts. It appears in the Huffington Post. And the article doesn't get into this, but it seems to me that if politicians aren't going to do it, perhaps the market will. And if places, developments on the shorelines are insurable, then people will build there and people will move in there. Is that changing?
Well, you know, you start to get into this issue of federal flood insurance, which is it's a huge deal. This is going to cost that program, which is already in the red. It's sort of been a money loser for the federal government for many years. This is going to cost them, again, billions of dollars, because what they do is, you know, this is a federal insurance program that's been around since the 60s. And they will step in and insure a coastal development when no one else will. And when these storms hit, that's when the federal government has to pay up. So, you know, what a lot of people say is they say, you know, it's essentially it's a distorted market because the federal government is insuring these places along the coastline. And as long as that's insured, when the storm comes along and destroys that house, they're going to rebuild it. They're going to reinsure it. And what they have is they have homes that they found. I think there might be some in New Jersey, but certainly along the Gulf Coast and stuff, where it's a $150,000 home and it's cost the federal government $1 million over the last, you know, 15, 20 years because it keeps getting knocked down. They keep rebuilding it.
So there's the free market argument there, right? Someone like Mayor Bloomberg, who's not adverse to saying you can't have a cup of soda more than 16 ounces. Maybe you could see a politician of that ilk saying we're just going to flat out say you can't build there. But then you have a Governor Christie who's a free marketer. You know, the argument you just made about let's not having the federal government come in and distort the market might appeal to him. So at least the arguments are out there if you want it for politicians across the aisle to agree with.
Yeah, well, Christie is in an interesting situation right now. I mean, you can definitely feel that the conversation over Sandy, it's shifting to let's look at the dollar cost. I mean, there's a huge human cost to this. And you know, it was just a tragedy sort of beyond compare. But the money that's involved in this at this point, it's starting to add up. People are looking at $30 billion, $50 billion. That's New York.
Yeah.
And you look at New Jersey, they're going to be, you know, $30, $50 billion. We're talking $100 billion here, maybe more. And sort of the, you know, trying to even grapple with those costs. Who's going to bear that cost? Who's going to sort of, you know, pay to rebuild some of these communities, particularly along the Jersey Shore?
Yeah.
These were areas that were known to be at risk.
It might be a weird situation where the fiscally conservative action is to deny the developers and to deny economic development. We'll get to the evacuation because the stuff that you wrote about in the Huffington Post was interesting. But I want to ask you about a place like Long Beach. I was there for the last 3 days, did a story on NPR about it. Here's an area that's been around for 100 years. People have lived there for 100 years. You know, in the early 1900s, it was built as the Riviera of the East. And the people there told me there have been plenty of events where the ocean met the bay, right, where this thin barrier island just flooded. But none like this, none this bad. What do you do with places? Your article aptly documents this new building that's gone on. But what do you do with places that have had people living there for a century?
Yeah, well, getting back to your point about how bad this storm was, that's sort of what we're hearing from scientists. That's what we're hearing from experts, which is that this storm, it just blew the records away in many cases in a lot of these areas. So, you know, I think it's a real challenge because there's a chance that we're dealing with sort of a new normal here.
Yeah.
That we've sort of now that we've seen this storm, now we know that this is possible. This kind of stuff hadn't happened in the past, or at least in the past 100 years. So, yes, it's true. What you have from Long Beach to Staten Island to places in Queens, they've been around for a long, long, long time. We've been talking to some experts, some scientists. They're saying, hey, look, we're going to be facing some very, very difficult decisions here. These are not easy decisions. But, you know, I would go back to this neighborhood that I visited in Staten Island. Talking to some of these experts, they're saying, look, this is a tough choice, but you know, do we rebuild some of these homes in Midland Beach? You know, there's a possibility the city may have to step in and say, look, we're going to buy this property from you. We're going to, you know, condemn it. It's not going to, you know, we're going to rezone it, essentially. It's going to, we can't keep rebuilding residential properties in these areas.
And then what you write about the Rockaways, I don't think I saw it put like this. You're right about how, though the big storms are rare here in the east, rarer than southern hurricanes, they attack on a straight line. They come in from the east. The water gets pushed into New York Harbor. It's boxed in. It goes to the Rockaways. So the Rockaways are physically vulnerable, and they're filled with the most vulnerable population. I mean, there was one point where the majority of public housing in the city was in the Rockaways. And there are so many elderly people because a lot of those nursing homes were built before there was air conditioning to get the ocean breezes. It seems like it's some, you know, evil experiment to put the most vulnerable people in the most vulnerable position.
I'm not going to speak to motive because we don't sort of have the reporting on that yet, but I think it's kind of obvious, especially if you read that section and you go back to look at the history. It's true. You know, we're talking about, you know, tens of thousands of people. They're the most vulnerable people, elderly, people of, you know, little means, pushed out there. Large house public housing projects, they're still suffering right now because that area was hammered so hard. So you have, public housing developments that still don't have power out there. And it's really been sort of a human catastrophe, but you can see how that sort of cake was baked over a period of decades. You know, it wasn't just a coincidence that you had such a concentration of those kind of people out in that specific area. It happened for a reason, and those are choices that were made long, long ago. Most of the people who really made the call on those are probably long dead, I would guess.
John Rudolph, who has written in the Huffington Post about development and how development in vulnerable areas along the coast, how that was impacted by Sandy. Also, a large part of his article was about evacuation. Now, a second ago, you said maybe the city needs to step in and say we just can't build here. Well, or maybe the city needs to step in and relook at their evacuation procedures. Because though there was evacuation issued, an evacuation notice issued for a lot of these places, it came pretty late in the game, didn't it?
Came very late in the game. You know, we're still trying to get to the bottom of that. You know, why that happened. I think there might have been a miscommunication. You know, as this storm was sort of moving up from the tropics, it shifted. It shifted from being a sort of a tropical system into sort of a more of a cyclone, and so there was some sort of impression we feel up in the, you know, in the city that they thought it was weakening. This is what they told us. They thought it had weakened. It was going to be weaker than Irene. It was a total misjudgment. We haven't gotten to the bottom of that yet. But what we were told is that they believed that it was going to be weaker than Irene at some point. And, you know, you just read our article because we have some quotes by Mayor Bloomberg that, I mean, he was completely off the mark. You know, he shifted right before the storm hit on Sunday. The rhetoric shifted dramatically, said everybody needs to get out. But if you know, read those statements that he made on Saturday night.
And you have quotes from people who are in the affected areas who said they were listening to those statements. And one day he was saying it's not going to be bad as Irene, which wasn't bad at all. And the next day he was saying, get the heck out. They heard those messages. Yeah. I think Irene is actually the underexplored and underreported part of this, because even though it was just a little over a year ago, we forget the amount of hype that went into this storm. And I didn't forget it. I was actually in the Caribbean while the storm hit. But afterwards, Howard Kurtz wrote in the Daily Beast. So try to remember the media hype around Irene. He wrote, "Someone has to say it. Cable news was utterly swept away by the notion that Irene would turn out to be Armageddon. National news organizations morphed into local eyewitness news operations, going wall to wall with dire warnings about what would turn out to be a Category 1 hurricane. The tsunami of hype on this story was relentless. Every producer knew to abandon the coverage even briefly was to risk driving viewers away." And I put forth that maybe the mayor got this message because he didn't really downgrade the warnings on Irene. And when it didn't hit, I think perhaps they were a little gun shy because, like Howard Kurtz documented there, there was a lot of hype about Irene that didn't pay off.
Well, I've covered Hurricane Irene. So if we overhype that storm, I'll take some share of the blame there.
TV in waders, talking about the wind lashing.
A couple of reporters and I rode out the storm down in Brighton Beach. Irene was no pushover. That was a hell of a storm. And what happened with Irene is the damage was river flooding, extreme rains. You know, the idea that Irene was just some sort of overhyped minor storm. Go look at some of these upstate areas. Look at some of those areas. It was devastating.
Oh, yeah.
New York City dodged a bullet. You could say the same thing with Sandy, with Atlantic City. I was down in Atlantic City. They dodged the bullet in some ways. They didn't get hammered nearly as hard as some other places. But I would go back to sort of this evacuation stuff. The city needs to reevaluate the evacuations. There's started been some good reporting. We had some good reporting on the evacuation of these nursing homes in this story. The New York Times did sort of a deep dive on what happened in Staten Island. But I would say, look, I walked around some of these neighborhoods in Staten Island before Irene and talking to people. They're going to ride it out. Look, the city has the power to force people to leave. They have – it's on the books. It's a misdemeanor. So, when something like this comes around, maybe they need to, again, come down with a slightly firmer hand of government. Say, look, if you stay – that's fine. It's your choice. You're going to pay a $1,000 fine. I bet you'd get about, there's ways, I think, to increase the rate of people leaving these neighborhoods.
Although I think we both know a little bit about human nature. The next storm, people will leave.
Just like
the storm after Katrina, they left. But do you think long term, do you have confidence that either business interests, inertia, the inability to look back and assess your own mistakes, will all this add up to, not instituting the necessary reforms for hurricanes? Or do you have confidence that our public officials and the public will get the storm protection it needs?
Well, I think you're gonna have a tale of two cities here, sort of a tale of two states. You've got New Jersey, you've got New York. New York has sort of been ahead of the curve, supposedly, on climate change, on sea level rise, these kind of things. Now is sort of their chance to say, look, we're going to be a leader here. Go, if you look at the Netherlands, and we've gotten emails, we've gotten comments from people who live there, and they're saying, 100-year storm. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
We plan for a 10,000-year storm. And then you look at the rhetoric coming out of Christie, and I think it's telling. We spoke to one of his top environmental guys, and he said, it's not our call to tell people what to do on the coast with development. If they want to rebuild, we're going to, try and guide that. But it's not our sort of job. And we're talking to people down there, in the environmental community and in the activist community. And they're saying, that's ridiculous. It's completely the job of the state to sort of figure out, what's safe and what's not.
Well, the people in the Netherlands know where they live. The people of New Orleans know they live in a bowl. And I think gradually the people of the New York area, it's dawning on them that we live in an area of vulnerability. Thanks in part to reporting such as the one by the article in the Huffington Post by John Rudolph, who's a national reporter for the HuffPo. John, thanks very much.
Hey, it was my pleasure.
And in a minute, we'll be talking about marijuana and the legalization thereof in a couple of states. Stay with us.